and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
Man, we got a show today, my friend.
Loaded for bear.
We've got David Sedaris on the show. Of course, he's the best-selling author of Me Talk Pretty Someday, Naked, Barrel Fever. His new book is Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim. He grew up, he's about the same age as me.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of commonality there in the type of things that we grew up with. Eli Wallach is going to be here. David Plotz, who wrote the book The Genius Factory, The Curious History of the Nobel Prize Sperm Bank. And, of course, Eli Wallach, you know, from the movies.
Oh, yeah, bunches of movies. Good and Bad and Ugly and The Godfather.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of movies. He was also, he had a little part in Mystic River. He played the liquor store owner. We'll be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, this Friday from 6 to 9. We'll have tons of giveaways and great guests. So, you can go to morningsedition.com for details. We've been out and about all over the city. We were at the Strand Bookstore. We were at City Bakery.
Yeah.
You remember City Bakery? That's where Mike Doty, I think it was his third appearance on the show, played for us. And if you missed that, we want to share with you now one of the songs that Mike played with us over at City Bakery. Right now, Mike Doty, the ex front man for Soul Coughing.
Yeah.
His new CD, Haughty Melodic.
Haughty Melodic.
We're going to do a couple tunes from that.
Yep.
What do you got?
A song's called Busting Up a Starbucks.
Do it up.
Go right out to the Crypto Fascist Zombie Brigade.
Yes!
It will always be the end of time, the end of love, the end of life. Dogs will howl and yank the leash from tree to tree, from east to east. Does the man who makes the shoes own you, clown? You can't even pry the nameplate off now, can you? Fix it with your tiny fist there at James Van Der Beek and them sisters on sister sister. The only one that's ever felt this was you. The force is forcing you to feel like busting off a Starbucks. Busting off a Starbucks. Busting off a Starbucks. Busting off a Starbucks. This bitter drink made you drunk. Thoughts you think become unsung. See the flame. The sky is blue. The water's red. The flames are blue. Can you fix it with your tiny bit there? James Van Der Beek and them sisters on sister sister. The only one that's ever felt this is you. The force is forcing you to feel like busting off a Starbucks. Busting off a Starbucks. Busting off a Starbucks. Niagara won't conquer. East Orange get away. Busting off a Starbucks. Busting off a Starbucks. Busting off a Starbucks. Stay off the Starbucks.
off a Starbucks. Busting off a Starbucks. Busting off a Starbucks. Busting off a Starbucks.
Mike Cody. Mike Cody, great. That was great. We had a great time at City Baker. If you're interested and want to come down again or for the first time to see us do the show live, we'll be broadcasting from Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, this Friday from 6 to 9 in the morning. We're going to have a bunch of giveaways. We've got great guests. We've got DMC from Run DMC.
Rap legend.
Absolutely. Right now, we're going to be coming up. We got the Temple of Doom, the next Morning Sedition Radio Theater installation. And, of course, Mort Mortensen's Morning Remembrance coming up next.
I'm the Reverend Al Sharpton, reminding you that listening to any radio show besides Morning Sedition is officially considered selling out to the man. So keep it tuned here to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
The Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of Marc Maron and the Temple of Doom.
In his last adventure, Private Eye Marc Maron and his stereotypical lesbian assistant Grace narrowly escaped capture by angry evangelicals after trying to pass themselves off as members of the faithful. When who should come to the rescue? Mark's Christian ally, News Daddy.
News Daddy, what are you doing here?
I was just in a 40-city love tour with the Reverend Al Sharpton here.
Good afternoon to you today. Whoa, who are all those people?
That's my holy posse. They travel with me everywhere.
How did you manage to get them all in the van?
God owes the Reverend a solid, so he bent the laws of physics.
Mark, I hear you're looking for the Antichrist. God has also instructed News Daddy and me to seek out this instrument of the apocalypse.
Really? Did he also appear to you in the form of Johnny Carson?
No, he was off that week. We got a substitute God. I think it was Burt Convy.
Hi-oh!
But you must have been straight up tripping, Mark, trying to fool those evangelicals. Now they know you're sniffing out their territory, and they're sure to send out a goon to pop a cap in your ass. Pardon my language, Reverend.
No problem.
Does your posse ever stop doing that?
No.
All I'm saying, Mark, is to watch your back. Be careful about anybody trying to lay a trap for you.
Got it. Hang on. It's my cell phone. Hello?
Mr. Maron, my name is Federico. If you want to find the Antichrist, go to the back entrance of 174 and a half Q Street. Come through the alley. Arrive at midnight. Tell no one where you are going.
Hey, thanks. Well, Grace and I gotta go. I just got a tip on the Antichrist.
Mark, have you heard a thing I've said? This sounds like just the kind of jive trap I was talking about.
No, nothing like that. Some guy I've never met named Frederico just says the Antichrist is in the back of some building in a strange part of town at midnight.
You're an idiot!
Well, see you guys. I got a really good feeling about this.
10 minutes after midnight, Grace and I were tied to chairs in the back of the building on Q Street.
Boy, I didn't see this coming.
Good afternoon, Mr. Maron. Glad you and your homosexual lady friend could join my party.
Wait a minute. You look familiar. Haven't I seen crudely drawn caricatures of you in the Air America radio studios?
Probably. I'm anti-abortion leader Randall Terry, founder of Operation Rescue. We defend life in all its precious forms, no matter how small or how young. All life is precious. Now I'm going to blow you up.
Pardon?
Don't you recognize this building? It's a Planned Parenthood office. I tricked you into coming in through the back door so you wouldn't recognize where you've dragged all your girlfriends for abortions.
Actually, I don't think I've ever been party to an abortion.
Well, surely your lesbo friend can recognize a baby slaughterhouse.
My lifestyle has kind of kept me out of the loop on this one.
No matter. All life is precious. So I planted a time bomb in this examination table. On your way to hell, give my regards to all those babies you killed.
But I never did any...
Ta-ta!
Can Mark and Grace get out in time? Will Mark go to hell, or has he been there all this time anyway?
And even though Mark never visited that Planned Parenthood office for an abortion, will he remember that he went there once to ask if he could use a condom 3 years after the expiration date? Find out next week when we hear Mark say...
I wonder when Federico is showing up.
That's next week on Mark Maron and the Temple of Doom. And stay tuned later for the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company Players presentation of Mark Maron's Home Shopping Channel.
We know our listeners want souvenir items from the show, so we're selling a beautiful 24-inch color TV set straight from Dan Pashman's apartment. Only $12.95, or making your best offer. All right, this next item is an iPod with a selection of Wayne Gilman's favorite songs. Call now and you'll get a free...
Hey, Mark, have you seen my iPod?
No.
Oh, okay. Stuff keeps disappearing on me.
Okay, next item. We're selling this beautiful Emmy Award inscribed to our writer, Kent Jones.
Maron, you son of a bitch. Give me back my Emmy. Now.
That's coming up later on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
We're back. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. I'm here with Mark Riley. Look, folks, we'll be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn this Friday from 6 to 9. We're going to have a bunch of giveaways. We've got great guests, one of which is DMC from Run DMC. It's going to be fun. You can go to MorningSedition.com for details. I, Mark Maron, will be performing at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey this Saturday night. You can go to BananasComedyClub.com for ticket info. We're also raising money to send inner-city kids to summer camp. You can change the life of a kid in the South Bronx. Go to MorningSedition.com and click on the Camp Air America link for details. Folks, you know, every Monday we take a moment to reflect in our morning remembrance. Well, unfortunately, Mort Mortensen isn't with us today. He's not dead or anything, but he has had some fairly inspiring tributes lately, and we feel it's appropriate to revisit them.
As the people of the grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning Sedition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on. Here now is Morning Sedition grief correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
Oh... Thurl Ravenscroft, voice of Tony the Tiger. Thurl Ravenscroft, whose booming voice... I'm sorry.
A little choked up.
Hang on. Thurl Ravenscroft, whose booming voice of Tony the Tiger helped condemn two generations of American children to a life of high fructose corn syrup and tragic obesity, is now buried in a grave. After leaving the Air Force in 1947, Thurl went to Hollywood to form a vocal quartet called the Mellow Men, which performed with Danny Kaye, who Laurence Olivier said was gay.
Oh, no.
Friends recall how Kellogg's cereal came to him in 1952, requesting he write something for the new character, Tony the Tiger. After thinking about it for a while, a World War II vet came up with the words that would immortalize him in the world of advertising. Human entrails. Oh, gosh. You're still wearing that eyeliner?
No, man.
You know what makeup... I'm allergic to that makeup.
I don't even know why I do it, man. It's because I'm on the radio. No one sees it.
You see yourself. That's important. A religious man, Ravenscroft, began narrating annual presentations at the Crystal Cathedral in Southern California. Was known for ending his show with the phrase, Kellogg's Frosted Flakes. They are great! But not as great as the Lord Jesus Christ, who died on the cross for your sins, dirty heathens.
You all right, man?
Yeah.
Maybe you ought to blow your nose.
Oh, God, you have a tissue?
Yeah, here you go.
Thank you.
Oh, man. It's that time of year, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Hey, it's getting to be summer. Those who worked with Thurl Ravenscroft often called him unpretentious, while those who lived next door to him often called him loud. Men called the police whenever he was having sex. Ravenscroft requested his body be enjoyed every morning with skim milk and sliced bananas.
Oh, no.
Oh, gosh, you've been inadvertently spraying the urine on the karani here?
I think I might have a little bit through that vent over there, but it was an accident.
They're allergic to urine.
Wow. It's not easy for you, is it?
Let me get on with it. Okay. Delay. Josephine Clay Ford.
Mm.
Josephine Clay Ford, the only granddaughter of automotive pioneer Henry Ford, finally ran out of gas last week. A company representative said, quote, "This is one Ford that you won't see in your future." Doctors say the old Ford had valve problems.
Oh, no.
A bent frame and had to be cranked hard on cold boarding.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it is. Friends recalled during her youth, even on the hottest days, they couldn't get her to take her top down.
Oh, no.
Even though she had a great set of headlights. You vacuum in the carpet here recently?
Yeah, there's a little dust in the air.
There's a lot of dust.
You have a Kleenex, man.
You have allergies.
Yeah, I know.
Oh,
yeah, that's Peter. All right. Okay, buddy.
Auto experts say Josephine was a major force behind production of the Ford Pinto.
No.
Many assume it was due to her loyalty to family business, while others in the know insisted it was just because she knew so much about explosive rear enders.
Oh, yeah.
Explosive rear enders.
Yeah, I know, buddy. It's rough. Yeah. Rough.
In 1940, a little bit of history for you.
Yeah, thanks.
In 1943, Josephine Clay Ford married Walter Ford II, no relation to her family, making her Josephine Clay Ford.
Okay.
Ford. Historians speculate that had he died and she married director John Ford, and after he died, married actor Harrison Ford, the resulting name wouldn't be as funny as Ella Fitzgerald marrying Darth Vader.
Elevator?
Elevator.
Oh, that's good stuff. I think you're stretching a little here. Yeah. It must be because you're so sad.
Yeah. Family members requested her remains be sold for parts. Really should be a HEPA filter in this room.
You're pretty bad this morning.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
This has been Mort Morton's Insane. Who's chopping onions?
Oh, man. Coming up next, we're going to talk about a segment that got us into a little bit of trouble, but we're going to go to the tape to prove our innocence. How do you like that? A little hands-on investigative work. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Randy Rhodes on Air America Radio.
It's 34 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yeah.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We got David Sedaris coming up. You might know him from his books, Me Talk Pretty Someday, Naked, Barrel Fever. Very funny guy. Now, I need you to listen to something here, folks. We had a guest on, comedian Chelsea Handler. Remember her, Riley?
Yeah.
She was talking about women and one-night stands. And after she asked, okay, she said something questionable, I guess, okay?
Did she?
Well, we got in trouble for it, all right? Not just from listeners either, all right? I'm talking, you know, above listeners, all right? We'll leave it at that. I don't need to get into it, all right? But anyways, we really need to clear our conscience on this one. So let's hear a tape and find out if we were really wrong or whether it was her who was wrong. We're pleased to have actress and comedian Chelsea Handler. She's one of the stars of Oxygen Network's Girls Behaving Badly and is the author of this book I'm holding in my hand right now, Horizontal Life, My Horizontal Life, a collection of one-night stands. Good morning, Chelsea. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, boys?
We're very good.
All right.
So, I never knew that there were women that were proud of having one-night stands. And this is a...
That's right.
I knew you were out there because I've had several, so they must be out
several,
there.
Several, Mark?
Well, you know, in the old days. I had to.
Back in the day.
Back when I was married to my first wife. Anyways, is that bad?
Old school, huh?
Yeah, are you proud of your one-night stands? Obviously, you wrote a book
about
it.
No, I've been living in L.A. for 10 years, and I was, you know, in my 20s and having a lot of fun and a lot of girls, you know, I just got so annoyed with these girls that pretend they're not doing it, that are, you know, shy and say, oh, no, nothing happened, and then, you know, 3 weeks later you find out she got, you know, double teamed or something. Like, I hate that stuff. It's like, we're doing it. There's nothing wrong with it if you're single and you're, you know, you're not married yet. You're out there having fun, and I had so many funny stories that I figure... I think I should write a book.
So what's the best one? What was the best one night stand you had?
Well, the funniest story in the book, mm-hmm. I think, is the story when I hooked up with a midget in Mexico.
Wow.
All right, stop the tape. Now, here's where we took some heat, Riley.
Yeah.
And I have to say, for all the things we deserve to take heat for, this was not one of them. I know it doesn't sound like this is headed anywhere good for us, but just listen to the rest, and you guys be the judge.
I have a very grand affinity for midgets. A lot of people are scared of them, like they have phobias, you know, like they do for snakes or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel the opposite. You know, mm-hmm. I see them and want to, like, hold them down and cuddle them because uh-huh. they're so cute, little guys.
Yeah.
But you have to respect them. You uh-huh. can't just, you know, like, pick them up. You have to ask first. And some of those guys are heavy. So
yeah.
you really have to respect them. And I just love them. Like, you could never get mad at one, you know. Uh-huh. They're so cute. Uh-huh. What did you do, get in an argument and pick them up and throw them in the microwave like a little shrinky dick? Who's your mommy now?
I can tell you have a lot of respect for midgets.
Yeah, I do. I respect them. I want to get one.
Oh, yes. Lord.
Mostly for the carpool lane, but I would also play with them a lot.
Uh-huh.
We hooked up. Luckily, I drank too much tequila
that
vague. Night.
A little vague.
Well, yeah, well, if you read the book, you'll find out exactly what happened, Mark.
Okay.
But no, we didn't actually consummate our relationship.
Okay.
We just hooked up, and it got pretty wild. He was in my hotel room the morning when I woke up. Mm-hmm. I heard his little feet pitter-patter to the bathroom,
oh
and I didn't know exactly what had happened. So.
We're going to get so much mail from offended little people.
Little people.
Yeah, little people. That's a correction. Change everything I just said to little people.
Yeah, yeah.
They like that better.
You're saying about getting yourself one.
You hooked up with a bushy?
A bushy?
Yeah.
What is that code for? A Republican?
Somebody who, yeah, somebody who worked in the Bush administration.
Oh,
figured
yeah.
that right
oh,
out.
Oh, wow. I'm like, I forgot my own book. Yeah, I did.
Wow. How many one-night stands have you had?
I've had a lot.
Now,
a lot.
Tell us about this guy from the Bush administration.
Well, it's so funny because you meet these guys. Like, you know, this guy was an attorney for the government. He prosecuted terrorists. I was, like, so turned on by that until I realized that meant he was a Republican. I was like, what? I'm like, where? He's like, well, I'm registered as a Republican, but I don't always vote that way. I'm like, all right, well, let's get this party started. So we were hanging out in Seattle.
That was enough?
Yeah. As long as he told me that sometimes he voted Democrat, I was like, okay, we can steal this deal. So we were hanging out, mm-hmm. and you know that look people give you when they're on cocaine? Like,
oh,
that
yes.
mouth jaw
yeah.
thing?
The weird grindy
yeah, that,
kind
and,
of.
Yeah. Like, I came out of the bathroom all ready to get things going. And I saw that look on his face, that, and it's
his
grossest.
Eyes are all buggy, and he's working
yeah,
his jaw.
Like his mouth,
yeah.
that jaw move,
yeah,
which is
boy.
Such a gross
yeah.
thing. I don't know why anybody ever does cocaine
yeah.
if you look like that after. It's
yeah.
like, are you having a good time?
Yeah, man, that's a really good
like
time.
Why?
And what happened?
So I was like, are you on coke right now? Because I had seen that look plenty of times.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, I just did a lot, I just did a little. And I'm like, well... Is this going to affect your performance?
Oh,
and he's like, no, I should be fine. Sure enough, it affected his performance in a major way. We didn't, mm-hmm. I mean, I put in a lot of time into this guy, like 2 hours.
Wow.
I didn't have time to be like, you know, messing around trying to get
put another 2 hours in.
I had to catch a flight in the morning. It's like, I literally rolled over. I'm like, just go.
Oh.
I'm like, just go home.
Wow.
He's like, can I call you in LA? I'd love to make it up to you. I'm like, no, you're a mess. Why? You work for the government and you're just snorting lines? Like,
uh-huh.
on a Tuesday night? I don't think so.
Wow. It's, you know what's ironic about this is that the Bush people accused all the Clinton people of being the cokeheads.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't it so funny? I'm like, I don't understand how people can function. How can you be an attorney for the government and be just like, and these like actors and all these people that are, you know, have to perform all the time. How can you be coked to the gills and then do your job?
The book is My Horizontal Life, a collection of one-night stands. Chelsea Handler, thanks for being with us. Nice talking to you.
Thank you, guys.
All right, so we laughed a little bit.
Yeah,
right?
So what?
Right, but I did try to say little people instead. I tried to get her to say little people, and aside from some nervous chuckles, Mark and I never engaged in, quote, midget bashing.
No.
Right? We did not.
No, we did
and
not.
And we were accused of doing that.
That's right.
That bashing was engaged in by our guest, Chelsea Handler, and all complaints can be addressed to Bloomsbury Publishing, 5th Avenue, New York, New York. All right? But don't go too hard on her, all right? She talked trash about a coked-up Republican. Coming up next, we got Planet Bush, folks, Lawton Smalls. This is Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Hey, this phone system is screwing me up by hanging me up before I get a chance to punch it in. Listen to my song. Now, I may have some strange religious views, 'cause I believe Al Franken is the king of the Jews.
Next message.
Call us at 866-303-2270. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
So call us right now. 800-430-9571. 800-430-9571.
We're back. I'm Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We'll be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn this Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. Come on down. We're going to give away some stuff. We got great guests. We got DMC from Run DMC. You can go to morningsedition.com for details. If you missed us at our last couple of live broadcasts, that would be at the Strand Bookstore or at the City Bakery here in Manhattan. Here are some highlights for you. Right now, you know, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world, so now on the phone once again is Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton. Good morning.
I'm actually here, Mark.
Good morning, Lawton.
I'm actually here.
Did I say on the phone?
You said on the phone, which is completely wrong. But
I didn't realize you were going to come. It's nice to see you.
I'm here in New York, and I've never been here before, and now I know why. Look at all these sad folks. $2 for a croissant. Come on. Why do you live here?
Come on, take it easy.
That's robbery.
Take it easy, Lawton. We're having a live show. We thought you might enjoy it a little bit.
Mark, the only reason I came to New York was to see Ground Zero, to see Saddam's handiwork.
Oh.
But I guess we showed him. He's out there in his underwear now. I got a poster of him in his underwear right there on my garage.
Come on,
hilarious.
Man. Come on.
I laugh and laugh.
No one even believes that WMD stuff anymore. Well,
well,
come on.
Nobody in the fancy bakeries you hang out in. Where I live, however, you know, I wanted to see the place where George W. two-term mandate Bush got in the bulldozer and moved all that rubble out of Ground Zero by himself.
Come on.
He's the greatest president ever. There he is in the bulldozer.
Well, why don't you...
Fantastic.
Why don't you seem very happy to be here there, Lawton?
Let me tell you something.
What?
Until this morning, I thought we were winning the war on terror.
Yeah.
Then I got in a cab and took a look at the driver.
No.
Mark, you all are
come
surrounded.
On. Come on.
Okay? Yeah, if I told this guy to take me to Osama's cave, he would have taken me right there. It was like I was in the Al-Qaeda cab company. I was very...
That's racial profiling, Lawton. It's disgusting. But I guess it shouldn't surprise me
coming
from you. I mean, New York, my friend, is the most diverse city on earth. You're just going to have to deal with that. Yes, see, Lawton, a little outnumbered, aren't you? How's that feel, buddy?
Let me tell you what New York is. This is the gay, liberal, godless, secular agenda vomited out over a giant city grid. Vomited out.
That's
New York is where Satan lives, Mark. This is where he gets his mail. Right here. La Casa de Beelzebub.
Hey, come on.
Satan.
So why would you say that? I mean, why? You've been here one day. One. What are you so negative for?
All right. I was up in Times Square, teenage hookers everywhere.
What are you talking about?
Everywhere with their little tank top, long legs, and their dirty little smiles. Dozen of them just getting off of buses. It was unbelievable. It's Sodom on the hood.
Stop it.
Sodom.
That was probably some church group here on a theater trip. Happens every day.
Okay, let's play Fool the Turret. I'm done. All right, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, what's with everybody wearing black in this town? Who died? Okay, did Joy die?
Stop it.
I think it was murdered.
Stop it. Lawton, come on, man. This is
murdered.
It's a great city. People love it here.
Yeah, I don't know how. There's no public toilet.
Okay.
So I suppose that could account for the nasty attitude I've been getting everywhere.
Oh, come on.
I wave at folks all day yesterday.
Yeah.
It's like I'm not here.
Oh, come on.
And, you know, okay, yesterday I see a light.
Yeah.
It says W.
Yeah.
And I said, finally. It's a hotel full of glass and skinny girls and overpriced drinks. I can't tell you my disappointment, Mark.
Come on,
man. Tell you.
Come on, buddy. Come on, man. No one was helpful to you today at all.
All right, there was one guy.
Yeah.
There was one fella.
Yeah.
He told me to go to a place called The Rawhide.
Yeah.
Said they would understand my kind there. So I went downstairs and waited in the corner and said, I did a surprise. I'm going to go there right after.
Yeah, you better.
What are you laughing at? You're eating $3 muffins.
That's all right.
Well, look, that's funny.
Come on. I'm pretty good at figuring you out, Lawton. So
I know
what this is about.
Sodom.
No, you love New York, buddy, don't you?
No, you love it.
Come on, you love it.
You're wrong.
Come on.
Wrong.
You love it. You've always loved New York. You love how loud it is. You love how fast it is. You love the fact that people aren't all the same and aren't afraid to speak their minds. You actually hate Planet Bush, don't you? New York is the promised land, isn't it? Yes, it is, Lawton. Go ahead. Oh, look at that. What's up, man?
Broadway, Mark. I love Broadway.
I do.
I love it so much. Yeah. I love Broadway so much.
I know you do. Yeah, that's it, baby.
So much.
Yeah.
You know, just Planet Bush is boring. I hate it. Yeah. You know, as a kid, I used to go around dressed as Rum-Tum Tugger from Cats for weeks at a time. Weeks. Today I walked around 44th Street all day long, hoping I'd run into Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Oh. So did you run into him?
No, Mark, but I could have. That's the deal. I could have run into him. Yeah. I want to live the rest of my life here. Planet Bush is boring. I hate it. There's no theater. There's only NASCAR. Oh, what's theater? Hey, look at these stupid clothes. You people are great. Memory.
Oh, no.
All alone
no.
In the moon.
Oh, no. No, sing,
I can
please.
Smile.
Come on, Lawton.
Sing with
please.
Me, Mike.
Please.
A beautiful day.
Oh, no. Please don't sing. Please, Lawton, please.
I knew what happiness
stop
was.
It. Stop it.
Let the memory.
God. Oh, my God. Please stop it. Just stop singing. What? You all right? You going to be all right? Are you going to be all right, buddy? Come on, now I'm concerned. You okay? Huh? Come on. All right, take it easy.
And what is with all the music here? It's all hip-hop. I haven't heard Toby Keith once today.
Oh, see, that was back.
Are we in America?
All right.
Where's Toby Keith?
All right, goodbye, Lawton.
I had it.
Yeah, goodbye. Sorry. Get out. Nice
I love you. Deal with it.
Okay.
Deal with it.
I'm trying. Lawton Bush. Lawton Smalls from Planet Bush. The people love them some Lawton. That was Lawton Smalls visiting us live at City Bakery. And when I was broadcasting from the Strand Bookstore, we got a visit from the liberal aggressor.
Maren, I can't believe it, but I see over hiding behind the bookshelf over there.
Oh, no.
It's that guy who calls into the show sometimes. He's always talking about the revolution.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's from that group Teabag or Balls or whatever it was called.
Oh, man.
I don't know. Do you want him to talk? I can have him sit down right there.
Let's have him sit down. Hey, man. So you're back. Are you here in business or...
No, Mark, I did not know you were taping here today, but since I'm here, I suppose I should get the word out about...
Come on, you guys. You want to hear it, don't you? You know you want to hear him say it.
About the revolution!
All right, there you go. You feel better, buddy?
Yes, Mark. I'm actually here at the Strand today picking up some postcards featuring my hero, Che Guevara.
Oh, really? That's great, man.
$14.95, a little pricey for postcards.
But that's good. You're finally thinking like a revolutionary, man.
Yes, I recently watched The Motorcycle Diaries, which is about Che. I figured that out halfway through. And I decided that perhaps it was my time to go on a personal vision quest to find the soul of the revolutionary within.
You got fired from Lady Footlocker, didn't you?
I don't want to talk about it, but I have applications in at Elaine Bryant's, and I'm considering an offer from Hickory Farms, though I am lactose intolerant.
All right, so I would have guessed that. So tell us more about the revolutionary vision quest of yours, man. I mean, I suppose you modeled it after Che's. Did it by any chance involve you leaving your apartment?
Oh, yes, Mark. I dusted off my hog.
Your hog?
It's a Schwinn. Motorcycles frighten stompers.
Your shih tzu.
Who cannot be left alone.
All right, go ahead.
I put stompers in the handlebar basket and pedaled off into the horizon, not knowing where the day would take me.
That sounds great, man. So where'd you end up?
Union City, New Jersey, Mark.
Oh.
That is where my Cuban hermanos live.
Ah.
Union City is La Corazon de la Revolucion.
Oh, that's great. You speak Spanish.
No, Mark, just those four words and hermanos.
Oh, okay.
And all the words on a menu from Fresco Tortilla. But I didn't need to speak Spanish, for my Latin American revolutionary brothers and I spoke the international language of struggle. Viva la revolución!
All right, so they just accepted you just like that?
See, Mark. They embraced me and even gave me a name.
Okay.
Everywhere I went, I smiled and waved at them, and they called me Maricón.
Oh, God. All right. Maricón, huh?
Yes, I like it, too. Very patriotic. Maricón.
Yeah, okay. So were they able to inspire you, you know, pump some life into your little liberal revolution?
Oh, yes, Mark. In fact, much like Che, I've become sort of a folk hero for them.
Oh, really? Yeah?
Yes, and as I spend more time with them, they have ascribed revolutionary slogans to me, like El Dumbass Mas Grande en El Mundo and Pendejo.
Oh, you know, buddy, I'm pretty sure Pendejo means idiot.
No, I'm afraid you're wrong, Mark. They said it meant warrior. In fact, I got a Pendejo tattoo right here. This is for La Raza.
Wow, man. Okay, a tattoo. So I guess you truly are a Pendejo.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much. It gave me, hermano, so much joy watching me get this tattoo. They laughed and laughed.
So you did your vision quest. You got your tattoo. You learned a few words. So now, are you going to put the revolution in motion?
Yes, with a brand new group name, also given to me in El Barrio.
Okay, so lay it on me.
The People's Underground Threat Alliance.
Puta?
C-Mark, puta! So who's with me? Are there any putas in the audience today?
Oh, whoa. You gotta
puta,
stop it. You gotta
puta,
stop it.
Dude,
turn
puta,
his mic off. Can someone from the Strand get him a Spanish English dictionary right now, please? Please, get him a Spanish English dictionary. I'm begging you. Okay, that was Pendejo, who is the proud leader of Puta. That was from our live broadcast at the Strand. If you want to experience that and much more in person, come on out to Brooklyn this Friday when we do the show from the Tea Lounge on Union Street and Park Slope. Coming up next, we're gonna have Rapture Watch, and David Sedaris is gonna be with us. It's 57 past the hour. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Blah, blah, blah.
It's 6 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition. This is Air America Radio. I, of course, am Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
We got a heck of a show. Heck of a show. Listen to me. We've got David Sedaris coming up. You might know David's work. Me Talk Pretty Someday, the book. Naked, the book. Barrel Fever, the book. Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim, now available in paperback, just coming out. Looking forward to talking to him. He's a very funny guy.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard him on NPR, Riley.
Oh, no, not
yeah.
that.
Uh-huh. Eli Wallach is going to be here, the actor. You might know him from, a million movies, The Misfits with Marilyn Monroe, Clark Gable, and, of course, The Good, Bad, and the Ugly. He's an elderly gentleman, but has his wits about him.
Spry guy.
Yes, looking forward to talking to him. We'll be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, this Friday from 6 to 9 a.m., of course. If you want to see us, we're going to have tons of giveaways. We're going to have great guests. DMC from Run DMC is going to be there.
Yeah.
You can go to morningsedition.com for the details. A lot of people came to our live broadcast at City Bakery. A lot of people came to our live broadcast at the Strand.
Yeah.
But let me tell you something. If you weren't at City Bakery, you didn't get a chance to hear one of our favorite guests, Mike Doty, play a couple of songs. He's great live, and we've had him in the studio several times. So we're going to share a little bit of that live performance from City Bakery with you right now. What do you got now?
Play a song called White Lexus.
White Lexus, Mike Doty, once again.
By the way, it's a really happy day for me because I remember in 1974 they preempted Batman for the Watergate hearings. Deep, deep memory for me. Yeah.
Is that a bad memory?
No,
memory.
It's a beautiful. Well, I was very angry at the time, but now it's a good memory. As a 4-year-old, I did not understand. I suppose Halberman in a Batman costume would make me feel better. Yes.
Please show me how to live. Please show me how to have a day. I don't want to wake up now. Why do I have to wake up anyway? Like a soap star in anguish, Wilbur Bland. When your white legs come around the way, I lay in a long driveway, try to feel nothing on command. When your white Lexus comes through, be damned. I'll forgive the world right now. Still I play the chump's role every time. My world's the surface of the moon. My heart's down in the diamond mine. Like the black stars of Memphis moaning on. When your white Lexus comes to drive me out, drive me to the edge of town. Try to feel nothing on command. When your white Lexus comes through, be damned. Damn at the last damn man. When your white Lexus comes, when your white Lexus comes, when your white Lexus comes.
Yeah. Mike Doty. Excellent.
Thank you.
I love your voice, man.
Oh, thank you.
It's a great song.
And I yours. I love
oh,
your
Oh, that's so very awesome. Sweet of you. Mike Doty, the new album, Haughty Melodic.
Haughty Melodic.
That was Mike Doty. Mike Doty?
Mike Doty.
That was Mike Doty, Riley. And
yeah.
You love Mike Doty.
I love his work, man.
Yeah. If you weren't at our live performance, that's a little bit of it. We're going to have a little bit more of it coming up. We've got Rapture Watch live. Dig that on Air America Radio. That's Jim David, folks.
Hello,
he's a regular on Comedy Central.
Hello, everybody.
Performs in comedy clubs all over the world.
Clubs
he's now also doing columns for The Advocate. Congratulations
right.
on that, kid. So what have you been up to, man?
I've just got back from performing at the Akron, Ohio Home Depot Caulking Conference. I performed at the Bob's Big Boy Clean Colon Festival.
Really? Sounds great.
Yes, I performed at a hospital benefit, and I followed a quadriplegic who sang, "You'll Never Walk Alone." My career has taken off.
Tough crowd, folks.
You're
I tell
I'm
you, that's a
that
tough
up.
Crowd. Am I right, Jim?
They think I'm making that up, but I'm not making that up. I got back. I was in the Galapagos Islands, Mark.
Were you there studying evolution?
No, I was. Well, I was swimming with the sea lions.
Well, yeah, but that's where Darwin had the big revelation.
I know,
evolution.
and then we saw the first graffiti that was
come on.
Written after Darwin left, which said it's only a theory.
Only a theory,
right? Hey, I'm glad this audience got that. That's really
of course they're going to get
smart. Of course you're going to get a smart at the Strand Bookstore at 7 in the morning. A smart audience.
At the Tulsa Zoo yesterday, the city council members agreed to put a sign, a plaque at the zoo that
says it's only a theory.
No, that says it's about creationism. Isn't that ridiculous?
You
and
gotta
that's
be
their
kidding
only
me.
That's their only defense, man. That's their only defense. It's like it's just a theory. It doesn't explain everything, which means there must be a divine creator. Isn't that sort of like saying I don't understand it?
I know.
It must
not
be
only
magic.
That, and not only that, it's like the intelligent design theory has absolutely no basis in any science whatsoever. It proves nothing. It, all it says was God did it.
Yeah.
Or somebody did it.
You know what's amazing
all
to me?
It says.
That if you're a kid and you have this option, like if your parents give you the option of intelligent design over actually doing homework, wouldn't you sort of go like, oh, sure, I'll do the God thing. Yeah, all right, the God thing's all right. But I don't have to do homework.
That's right.
That's
how
they retard their children. They retard their children.
Hey, forget plankton.
Yeah, exactly.
Forget
exactly.
Zygotes.
Hey, just say God did
God
it.
God did it.
God, it's magic. God,
and you know what? That's also so funny about abstinence-only education. It's like you're spending how many millions and millions of dollars on abstinence-only?
Yeah.
And, like, how much can you teach? You know, for an abstinence-only class, hi, Don't do it. Good morning. That's our lesson today. Keep it in your pants. Thank you. Tomorrow, we'll learn how to not do it.
Right, but the teaching part is like, oh, yeah, and be scared of it.
Oh, I know.
Scared.
But you know what? This is one thing that I actually had a spiritual moment in the Galapagos Islands. Because these animals are not afraid of you because they haven't been taught.
Right.
So, in other words, you can go up and swim with this. I mean, it's so weird because you're swimming right next to freaking sea lions. Like, right up in your face, like a dog.
Have you had no problem with that?
I had no problem, but I was amazed that they had no problem with us being there because you feel like you're in there. And it's like, these animals have not been taught fear. You know what I mean?
Right.
They haven't been. Nobody's taught them fear.
Unlike me.
And what? You're a northern Jew, so you've been taught a lot of fear. Yeah.
A northeastern Jew.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, northeastern.
I'm not a Montana Jew. They have Montana
Jews. That's right.
Jews.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yes. They do. There's a few. Bob Dylan.
Right. And they have Midwestern.
I think
Jews.
It was Minnesota.
They have Midwestern anti-gay people are called Oklahomophobes.
Really?
But folks. I'll be here all morning. But I just thought these animals have not been taught fear, and that's why they're not afraid. And so it's like, as long as we're not taught to be afraid of something, we're not afraid of it, which is why the whole thing that Bush is trying to do and all they're trying to make us continually afraid and trying to – every day you see something on, you know, Fox News. I love tuning into Fox News just to see what – propaganda passes for news every day.
Sure, absolutely.
Just the subtle way that they report the news on Fox, you know.
Report.
Former President Bill Clinton is recovering from open heart surgery. The serial rapist and perpetual liar is resting comfortably at his home in Chappaqua, New York, which was purchased solely so that his wife could assume her position as queen of the damned. Now the weather. But I mean, you know, it's like, why be afraid? If you just say, I'm not afraid of you people.
Yeah.
And I'm not afraid of the propaganda and the nonsense that you throw out at me.
Yeah.
It was just, I learned this from the sea lions in the Galapagos Islands.
Oh, it's beautiful.
They taught me. And how appropriate that I make that revelation at the Strand bookstore, 18 miles of book. I want to know.
Let me ask you something. Were any of the sea lions like people from other countries when you visit abroad and they come up to you and go, hey, man, what's with Bush?
Bush is bad.
I know. They all do. The people in the other countries, because I've traveled a whole lot in the last year. I've been to Europe twice, and I've been to Australia, and I've been to, you know, everywhere I go, everybody in every country.
What's going on
What's going on?
Are you okay?
They're all quick to say, we like you. We like Americans.
Yeah.
But we don't like what's going on. Or what they'll say is they'll say, I don't want to get into politics, but are you crazy? Are you out of mind, you know? They all do that, and I'm like so tired of trying to defend my country, which I love.
That when that whole Terry Schiavo thing, I mean, you're from the South. When that whole thing was going down, and they had all those freaks in front that were, you know, speaking in tongues and falling on the ground.
Oh God!
Wasn't there a point where you're just sort of like, oh man, I'm so embarrassed because they're doing this in front of Europe?
Well, it's like, you know, that's half of my family.
That's
half of my relatives down there in front of Terry.
How do you deal with
that? Half of my family is fundamentalist Christian, and the other half is alcoholic white trash. And
all right, most of them are both, I'm assuming.
Yeah, exactly. And like my uncles and my aunts will get into an argument at Christmas, you know, in North Carolina, and you know my uncle will say, you know, Jesus died on the cross for your sins, and she'll say, well, that was mighty white of him, wasn't it? We all just better kneel.
I appreciate you coming by, comedian Jim David.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
800-357-1473. 800-357-1473. That's 800-357-1473.
Welcome back. You're listening to Mark Maron. That's me, and that's Mark Riley.
That's me.
The show is Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. You know what? We got David Sedaris coming up, who's a very funny guy. I've heard him on another radio network that I don't need to mention. We've also got Eli Wallach coming up, who's been in a million movies, one of which was The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. He played the Mexican guy.
The Mexican guy in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. He was hanging by a thread at the end of the movie.
That's right. The Mexican Jew part, of course. He's the Jewish man.
Mexican in The Good, Bad, and the Ugly. And I didn't realize it was him until recently. I knew it was him, but it was just one of those parts that wasn't a huge part, but he played the liquor store owner in Mystic River.
Yeah.
And he's still, you know, he's still quick. He's got his wits about him. Now, obviously, we've been trying to convince you all morning that the Morning's Edition live broadcasts are the place to be, my friends. We've got one coming up this Friday, and if a chance, you know, if you want a chance, if you ever desired to meet Cardinal Milfington, you can come down to the Tea Lounge in Brooklyn on Park Slope this Friday and meet Cardinal Milfington. What about that? How would you like to do that? And you can also touch Mark Reilly.
Oh, wait a minute. We're not having any of that. I'll shake hands with people, but otherwise, don't touch me.
Okay, all right. So here's a taste of what the people who showed up at the Strand Bookstore got from Cardinal Milfington. Here's a little rapture watch for you. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's rapture watch with Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Pomona, California. Your grace.
Heed my warning, thou blaspheming lovers of words. Your probing fingers have run up and down the musty pages of sin for the last time. And in the next chapter, Satan will spell out your punishment with endless dime store philosophizing on why Margaret Cho is the one that she wants. Prick up your ears, bibliophiles. The information desk is your entrance to Hades, and there are grumpy employee awaits you with potent body odor and a master's in James Joyce. You decide which is worse. Get ready to curl up with a red-hot book in hell, thy vain self-flatterers, who use big words when smaller words would suffice, like exegesis instead of gospel, epistle instead of letters, and supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, even though the sound of it is really quite a... Gah! Damn thee, Satan, thy powers are strong today. Diddle-diddle-a, utata montita concerna Chewbacca. The end times are nigh, dorks. And you're about to experience the fiery breath of God's wrath, for Satan and Schuster have just published your autobiography. And Christ really feels gypped you didn't elaborate on the time you saw your hot stepmother in the shower. As you might recall, thrice abdominals ago, I spake this unto you about a woman in North Carolina who had to remove 10,000 bees from her house. The week after that, I told you about a human leg, parts of a spine, and a hip that fell from the sky into the backyard of a family in New York. In the week after that, I told you if you want to go ahead and piss off 10,000 bees, don't be surprised when they cut you up and drop your ass in Long Island. Anywho, your time of reckoning is here, for according to a report by the NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or as I like to call it, the National Organization for Antichrist Admirers, Texas and Louisiana are sinking into the Gulf of Mexico faster than Liz Taylor passed out on a defective arrowbed. You got that one, Mark?
Yeah, right here, man. That's a good one.
What's more, the report authored by a geologist from LSU or Lucifer Satan University.
Of course.
Shut up. Says the new data means garden spots like Houston, Galveston, Brownsville, and Port Arthur are now vulnerable to catastrophic flooding. What's more, midnight approacheth, thou painted harlots of Harmahob, and Jesus is lighting the way by making wet on thee.
Oh,
for it was prophesied in Revelation 2 mil for Sister Sarah, and I quoteth, hey, who asked for input from you, fella? I don't go down to where you work and push all the important papers off your desk. And I quote it. And the three bowls of God's wrath shall rain destruction down upon the land of Waffle Houses. The first bowl will be too hot. The second bowl will be too cold. And the third bowl will be just right, and everyone will drown. Then the baby Jesus will come home to find Ann Richards in his bed. The rest is too sickening to relate here. End quote it. So there you have it, losers. Stick a fork in your world, because it's done. You don't have to worry about me, for soon I'll be standing before the judgment throne of Christ and his pet mongoose Nibbles. Yeah, he's got a pet and a mongoose. You know. You're awake now, right? Maybe if you read your holy scriptures, crap like this wouldn't come as such a surprise to you. Until then, fornicators, keep on fornicating, and we'll keep the light on for you. In hell.
Thank you, Cardinal Milfington. Have a cookie. Have a cookie.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Great. Great seeing you. We're going to do a...
See you later. I'll see you at Panic Attacks in Lodi.
Yeah. Okay, buddy. Good stuff, man. Good stuff. Thanks a lot, buddy. Yeah. All right. That was from our live show at the Strand Bookstore, which you missed, Riley.
Yeah, I know.
David Sedaris is going to be with us momentarily. Very funny, brilliant writer. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Franken, Al Franken, and Catherine Lanfer, the Al Franken Show on Air America Radio.
It's 34 past the hour. We're back. Good morning. I'm Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Folks, I've been saying this all morning. I'll say it again. We're broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge at Park Slope, Brooklyn. Come on down. Fly out if you have to. When we were over at the Strand Bookstore, we had people in from Florida, 6 to 9 a.m. this week, this Friday at the Tea Lounge in Park Slope. We're going to give away some stuff. We've got DMC from Run DMC, some other great guests. You can go to morningsedition.com for details. Also, this Saturday, I'll be performing at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey. So you can go to bananascomedyclub.com for ticket info on that. If you didn't know this, also, we are raising money to send inner-city kids to summer camp. You can change the life of a kid in the South Bronx if you go to morningsedition.com and click on the Camp Air America link for details. Look, folks, David Sedaris is going to be with us in just a couple of minutes. Most of you know his bestsellers, like Me Talk Pretty Someday, which has spent over 80 weeks on the bestseller list. He's also the author of Naked and Barrel Fever. He does his original radio pieces on This American Life on public radio. But let me tell you, if you've never heard of David Sedaris before, here's a little taste of what he's all about.
We're in Paris eating dinner in a nice restaurant, and my father is telling a story. So, he says, I found this brown something or other in my suitcase, and I started chewing on it, thinking that maybe it was part of a cookie. Had you packed any cookies? My friend Maya asks. My father considers this an irrelevant question and brushes it off, saying, not that I know of, but that's not the point. So you found this brown thing in your suitcase, and your first instinct was to put it in your mouth? Well, yeah, he says. Sure I did, but the thing is... He continues his story, but aside from my sisters and me, his audience is snagged on what would strike any sane adult as a considerable stumbling block. Why would a full-grown man place a foreign object into his mouth? Especially if it was brown.
We are pleased to have in our studio today best-selling author David Sedaris. His latest book, Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim, is now available in paperback. He'll be at the Strand Bookstore in Manhattan to sign books this Wednesday. David Sedaris, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, are you in? You live in both France and London, and that's a dream that many of our listeners have had. I know certainly after this re-election that all I heard was like, I'm going to France, I'm going to London. Now, you actually live in both those places. What are the reasons? Is it because you have disdain for America, or are you just tired of it, or are you more comfortable there?
It was just by accident.
Uh-huh.
My boyfriend has a house in Normandy, so we used to go there for vacation, and I wanted to learn the language, and I thought the best way was to move there. But it's just a little village, that house, so... And I thought it would be better to live in a city because you'd see newspaper headlines and you'd learn without even trying so hard. So it was just really by accident. I mean, he could have had a house in China or in Turkey or anywhere, really, and I would have gone. Plus, I'm a heavy smoker.
Okay.
So that was another incentive.
They let you smoke there. It's not illegal to smoke in France.
No, but
encouraged.
It was a little bit scary what happened in Italy recently, because now in Italy you can't smoke in any restaurant. And if you can control the Italians, you can control anyone. Anyone.
How's the language coming along? How's the French coming?
Oh, after a certain point, it's just all based on your personality, learning another language. I went to school for a while, so I watched, and I watch TV, I can read the papers, I understand everything that's said to me.
Right.
But, like, my boyfriend, he goes to the market, and you'd think he was running for mayor. Everybody calls out his name, and I go to the supermarket, so I won't have to talk to people. And there was a cashier there, and she was really... She was funny, and I liked watching her interact with other people. And then one day she started talking to me in a, you know, just in a friendly way, and I never stood in her line again.
I just too much pressure?
Too much pressure.
I've heard you read, I have not been to your performances, I've read some of your stories. Do you enjoy performing?
Yeah, I'm a ham, and that's the easiest way. This is... Laziest form of show business there is. I just read out loud, and every now and then I look up.
You don't improvise at all? Do you ever...
No.
No?
And there's a little question and answer, and I used to take questions much more than I do now. I use it as an opportunity to run my mouth about whatever I feel like talking about. I started my tour in Boston.
Okay.
And I had a monkey at my reading. And really, there's no point in reading if you're sharing the podium with the monkey. There's absolutely no point.
Why'd you bring, am I missing something? Why'd you bring a monkey?
A year ago, I was on my book tour, and I was signing books, and I had signed for 8 hours.
Yeah.
I was just on my butt signing books.
Yeah.
And this woman came up, and I always ask, you know, I try to have a little conversation, and I said, when was the last time you touched a monkey? I don't know why I asked, but I did. And she said, about 4 hours ago. And she works for this organization that trains monkeys to act as slaves for quadriplegics.
Oh, my God.
And she invited me to her center.
Yeah.
And it's called Helping Hands. I couldn't believe. I could not. Everyone has an idea of a monkey. Everyone I ever know that's had a monkey, they have an idea of a monkey, that it's going to be a little butler.
Yeah.
And it never works out that way. But these monkeys, you could say, empty this ashtray, and it would do it. Get me another cup of coffee.
So you said I got to have a monkey?
Unbelievable what these monkeys can do. So they brought one to my reading, because I've been doing some fundraisers for them.
Yeah.
At one point, I'm reading, and people are laughing, and I thought, I never got a laugh there before. I looked beside me. The monkey brought a little blanket with her, and she got under her blanket, and she was hovering around the table like a little ghost underneath her blanket. The monkey can sign books. She can't sign her name, but she knows which end of the pen to use, and she'll draw in a book.
Do you still have this monkey or something?
No, she just visits. She lives in Boston, so she came to the reading.
Oh.
So she just came there for the day, but... You know, it would almost be worth it to become a quadriplegic so you could get one of these monkeys. They don't charge the quadriplegics for them.
Right.
Really? They have a long waiting list.
Free monkeys.
Yes, they're free, but it costs so much to train a monkey.
I'm still going through my mental Rolodex of friends I know who have monkeys. You said, because you actually said, when you have friends who have monkeys, they're always complaining about the monkey.
My boyfriend grew up with a monkey.
But come on.
He grew up, he lived in the Congo.
Okay.
And a man knocked on the door one night at 10 o'clock and said, do you want to buy a monkey for $2.40?
Who hasn't fallen for that?
And every time there's a knock at my door, I'm hoping it's that man.
David Sedaris is our guest. I have to ask you, you are, I think, very, very honest in your writing and your reading. And sometimes, I think for a lot of people, that's a very painful process to learn to be that honest, to be that comfortable with being honest publicly. Was it painful for you at all?
No, it seems to me like the most sort of embarrassing I guess embarrassing is the word. Things that you can admit to are the things that most people have experienced, you know, because we're not that different.
Like
really.
Stopping up a toilet?
Oh, sure, sure. I wrote this story once. I went to a party, and someone had left something in the toilet, and I couldn't get rid of it. And I was afraid that people would think that it was mine, other people at the party.
Everybody does go through that.
Right. And I got to the point where I thought, okay, well, I'm just going to throw it out the window. I'm just going to throw it out. But everybody was seated at a patio, like 4 feet away, and they would have seen the window, you know, rise, and they would have seen me drop something. And then at that point, why even deny? You know, if you say it wasn't mine, who is going to believe you? But that's a story about something I've found rather than something I produced, right?
Yeah.
So I have little lines that I draw.
Are you ever going to run out? I hope you don't, but I mean, your family and your past, it seems to be a never-ending source. Do you ever fear that, like, that I've tapped out my childhood or my history?
Well, it depends on what I'm writing about. Mm-hmm. Like, right now, I have to write something about food for The New Yorker. So that sort of led to me writing about my family.
I remember I read the thing about your brother, and I can't remember what magazine it was, but the rooster is hilarious. That your younger brother.
Yes, my younger brother.
Who your mother couldn't understand how he came out of her.
Well, I think that's so odd. I see that a lot of times in France and in England, is Americans who moved there, and then their children speak a different language.
Right.
And I always think that must be so alienating for a parent.
Yeah.
And that's what it was like for my parents, because my brother was born in North Carolina, and he sounds so, often. I was at my sister's yesterday, and he'd left a message on the machine, and I had to play it three times before I could understand it. But he loves being written about. And so he got a website, and he sells barbecue sauce and T-shirts over the internet.
Because you've made him a star?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow. You get anything from it?
No, it's just his. And I was at a bookstore in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And they had my books, and then they had a stack of the ugliest T-shirts you ever saw in your life. And that my brother was supplying the bookstore. But it looked like I was merchandising. That's what it looked like. But I can't accuse him of exploiting me.
Do you guys get along?
Oh, very well.
We're going to have you stay with us, David, because we want to talk about this collection of stories you edited and also maybe get a little bit more into your family, of course. You're listening to Morning Sedition. More David Sedaris next on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on the air and online. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Experts now. 800-396-9711. 800-396-9711. That's 800-396-9711.
Welcome back. It's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron with Mark Riley. You're listening to Air America Radio. We've got Dr. Maron's movie reviews coming up. But right now we're with David Sedaris, author of Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim, which is now available in paperback. He's going to be at the Strand signing books, the Strand bookstore, that is, signing books this Wednesday. Now, David, you edited a collection of some of your favorite short stories called Children Playing Before a Statue of Hercules, an anthology of outstanding stories. Who's in it? And I know some of the proceeds go to a charity. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, all the money goes to 826 NYC, which was started by Dave Eggers, and it's a literacy program for kids who are...
Oh, they have that in San Francisco
as
well. I did a benefit for them a couple months ago. It's a great organization.
Oh, it's wonderful. The one in San Francisco is a pirate shop,
mm-hmm.
and you walk by, and they've got peg legs and eye patches in the window. You go beyond a secret door, and there's a whole little...
And they teach kids how to write, and they run writing workshops and programs.
And what they help... They'll help kids, like, write a college entrance essay. It's really popular with kids who moved here from another country and
mm-hmm.
don't know the language that well.
Mm-hmm.
Kids can get free tutoring with their homework.
That's
they send
amazing.
Writers out into the schools.
Mm-hmm.
What I think what's so great about it is you learn to write a certain way when you're in school, and so you
right.
just associate it with, I don't know, with writing papers about Jane Austen or
if you're not
really interested in that, it's just torment. But so I think it teaches a lot of kids that they don't have to write that way,
they can
or at least
express themselves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wanted to, they asked if I'd put together a humor anthology. But I really liked that McSweeney's humor anthology that came out last year, and I didn't really see the point in, I don't know, nothing could be better than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just asked if I could put together some of my favorite stories. And it says on the cover, edited by, but that makes it sound like, you know, I sat there thinking, Flannery O'Connor doesn't need that line. And they're all, Richard Yates is in there, Laurie Moore, mm-hmm. who's just phenomenal, Tobias Wolff, Joyce Carol Oates, who never ceases to amaze me. This great Indian guy named Rakhil Sharma. I just chose stories that I had memorized bits of. I'd read them so often.
How often do you find yourself reading as opposed to writing? Do you read constantly?
I love books on tape.
Oh, yeah?
I like hearing people talk.
Oh, yeah.
So I love talk radio,
mm-hmm.
and I love books on tape.
I hear him talking all the time.
Well, talk radio is so different in England than it is here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because here I'll go to a – when I'm traveling in the United States, I'll, you know, turn on the radio and listen to, I don't know, whatever I can find, you know. So sometimes it's – oh, gee, like I was listening to Christian talk radio a couple days ago and people were calling in talking about sexual problems but not using the word sex or problem. So it was sort of interesting. But there was a woman in England who sold her virginity over the Internet.
I remember that.
To pay for college.
Yeah.
And so I was listening to a talk radio program and the host said, all right, listeners, what do you think about that? And people called in and they said, well, your first experience usually isn't that good, or well, college does cost a lot. And they were very calm about it. But in the United States, if you were listening to, like, I don't know, like there used to be a fellow on in New York named Bob Grant.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's still here.
Hell, he is.
Yeah.
American talk radio hosts tend to be more, look what she did. She sold her virginity on the Internet. She's done this to us.
Where's the outrage?
Right. So then they try to work the callers up.
Yeah.
But then
yeah.
when you step back, sometimes you think, oh, wait a minute, it's not that, you know.
It's her virginity.
Right.
Yeah. When you go back and forth between London and France, do you find, I don't understand the EU that well, and I don't understand really what happened in France, but you've been there, and they've decided to vote against membership. What impact has that had on you personally or the people around you or France in general? What do you feel about
that? Well, in a selfish way,
yeah.
I'm hoping that it weakens the euro,
yeah.
because that American peso, that American peso has made it so hard to live in Europe.
Affordably, huh?
But Hugh has a house in Normandy, and it's in a little village in Normandy, and we were there a few weeks ago, and I was asking the neighbors how they were going to vote, and they were all voting against it. And in that village also, Le Pen won by a wide majority.
The French nationalists.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Which is odd, because here are these people. You don't – I was in the United States during the last election, and what I loved was that all the bumper stickers and all the signs in people's front yards. In France, no one has a bumper sticker or a pin or a sign in their yard. And it's impolite to ask anyone who they're voting for.
Really?
Which makes it safer to vote for Le Pen, because no one's ever going to call you on it. No one's ever going to ask you about it. So you can vote for the fascists and not worry about it, really. So
no one will call you fascist.
But if you're voting as an immigrant, right, if here this guy is running on an anti-immigration policy, then you walk by your neighbor's house thinking, oh, really? You don't like me?
Yeah.
And a lot of the, like the cab driver, I took a cab to the airport the day after the election, and the driver had voted against it. But he fell for the same line that a lot of people were falling for. That was, if you voted for membership, then you were going to be making less money. That a cab driver in Paris would be making the same as a cab driver in Krakow, which isn't the case.
And that's the way they were pitching it? That was the spin from the other side?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, the new book, David Sedaris, is Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim. It's available in paperback. You can get it on morningsedition.com at our special Morning Sedition rate. Thank you so much for being with us. It's great talking to you.
Thanks for having me.
You can meet David this Wednesday at the Strand Bookstore in Manhattan. And up next, you can meet my father, who's going to tell us what hot summer movies you got to go see. Plus, we've got actor Eli Wallach. Stick around. It's 57 past the hour. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
I'm trying to form a song here, and I can't have the phone people or whoever's in charge of punching my buttons, you know, needs to get some cancer, you know, needs to find their own disease in their own mind, you know, and how happy they really are with their life and how content they are and how they're going to look to the sky when they die, you know, or are they going to be in hell? I got an inconsistent mental disposition. Now, how's that gonna look in the dead?
It's 6 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
The show you're listening to is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. Man, we've got another big live broadcast that you're actually going to be at this week, Riley.
This time I'll be there.
You missed the cookies and the buttons and the picture taking and all the excitement at the Strand Bookstore. But you will be at the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn this Friday from 6 to 9 if you want to come down. We had people coming down from all around the world last time, so I don't want to alienate any of our listeners out there across the country. If you've got time, get a plane ticket. All right, come to Brooklyn. Hey, if you're living up there in Portland or Seattle or down in Florida or Wisconsin, get a plane ticket and come to Brooklyn. Hang out and have some coffee with me and Riley this weekend. I will be performing at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey this Saturday night. You can go to Bananas Comedy Club, bananascomedyclub.com for ticket info. Hey, we haven't done this in a little while, and with the summer movie season heating up, we figured it was time to get some reviews on the summer's hottest movies from someone who's seen all the latest titles, because that's what he does, because he doesn't have a lot else to do. Unfortunately, he doesn't really know it, that he's reviewing movies for us, and on top of that, he's my father. So here now is the phone conversation I secretly recorded with Morning Sedition's resident movie reviewer, my dad, in a segment we like to call Dr. Maron's Movies.
Hello.
Hey, Dad.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. Where are you?
We're in the car. Let me get out of the car for a minute. Hold on.
Uh-oh, this can't be good. Why is he getting out of the car? I thought it was, I guess it's not running.
Hi, Margaret.
Who the hell's Margaret?
Hey, it's closed. All right.
Car? You don't know how to close the door of a car?
This.
What?
It's something I...
What's it? Who's Margaret and what couldn't you close there?
It's Rosie's sister. She's going with us. She goes to the dentist in El Paso.
Where are you now? Are you at a gas station?
No, we're driving. I'm sitting in the back seat. Rosie's driving.
Oh, you're driving. All right. So what's going? Did you see this Cinderella Man?
Yes.
What do you think of that?
I like that. It's a heart-rending story, and you know, when you know it's a true story, it kind of makes it a little more interesting to me. We saw Layer Cake, which I thought was so.
What is it? What's it about? I didn't even see it. Someone recommended it to me. I never saw it. I never heard of it.
It's English actors. I think it's an English production, and it's about. It's about crime. It's about drugs and crime and the middleman.
Yeah.
And how the middleman was supposed to be the hero of this thing, and then doesn't end up that way.
What about the Star Wars?
No, I don't see them.
You didn't see it at all?
No, I've never gone to them. I've never enjoyed the special effects like Matrix and all that sort of stuff. I just never enjoyed them.
What about this Brad Pitt movie?
That's a good movie. I mean, it starts to get into the special effects stuff.
That you don't like?
No, but it's an interesting story, and it was nice to hear her interviewed about it, you know, Jolene. You know, she sort of disowned her father and doesn't talk to him anymore.
What does that have to do with the movie?
Well, she's
been responsible, apparently, for the breakup of Brad Pitt and Aniston. All this intrigue of love triangles in Hollywood.
It made the movie better?
No.
All right, so you don't think they had sex or anything before he left Jennifer Aniston? Come on.
Well, what can I tell you? I can only tell you what I heard. But that's how you convict a child molester, and how you let off questionable people like Wacko Jacko.
We didn't talk about it very much. I guess the jury did its job. I mean, it was a pretty flimsy case. I mean, he's obviously a weirdo. I don't know. I assume that he did it.
Yeah, but I think. I think what you take away from that is that on the insider's track, he might do these things, but he doesn't do them maliciously as a predator. He's just, eccentric type of guy, juvenile mentality.
You mean he might sleep with kids as opposed to have sex with them?
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I took away from.
Oh, okay.
How's everything else?
Everything's pretty good.
Enjoy yourself.
Thanks, you too.
All right, take care,
man. Bye. So to sum it up, here's the deal on some of the hot summer movies. Cinderella Man is a heart-rending story because you know it's true. Layer Cake is so-so for an English production, and Something About a Middleman, I don't know, I couldn't even understand what he was talking about. Mr. and Mrs. Smith starts to get into that special effects stuff, but it's an interesting story, and it's nice to hear about Angelina Jolie's personal life. And Michael Jackson might do some questionable things, but not maliciously, like a predator. So that's my dad. We're going to talk to veteran actor Eli Wallach momentarily.
Yeah.
And also, we got a guest that's talking about a sperm bank, a Nobel Prize-winning sperm bank. And I don't know, Riley, if you had a choice to have a genius's kid or your own, what would you go with?
I'm going with my own. I'm a genius myself.
See, I don't know if it's right or wrong, and I don't know. I think I'd want to. I don't know if I would get a sperm donor, even if I knew the kid was going to be the second coming. I wouldn't care. I'd rather.
Never know how kids are going to turn out, no matter how smart the sperm is.
That's a good point. We're going to get to the bottom of some of that, hopefully, with our guest who wrote a book about the Nobel Prize winning sperm. It's called the Genius Factory, The Curious History of the Nobel Prize Sperm Bank. David Plotz will be with us as well. So stay here. Coming up is Eli Wallach and David Plotz.
Embryonic stem cell research. Is it right? Here's a message from The Speck is the Life Ministries and the Reverend Messersmith.
We've all heard the godless liberals who say it's okay to chop up stem cells and use them for research. But stem cells are living things. And if you don't believe me, I have one right here. Isn't that right, Sammy the Stem Cell?
Whatever you say, numbnuts!
Sammy, won't it be great to develop into a human being made in the image of God?
Okay, first, humans can kiss my microscopic ass. And second, screw God. You know what I mean? I'm God. Maybe humans are the virus. Did you see The Matrix?
But Sammy, don't you want to be a little baby?
A baby, sure. Only if I get to breastfeed. I mean, big milky ones. Wow! Reverend, you and I think alike, you dirty butt slurp. No, I don't want to be some whining, helpless little poop machine. Abort me now! Hack me up and suck me out with a vacuum! That's what Sammy says!
But don't you think it's cruel to do research on stem cells, Sammy? It's murder.
That's not murder. I'll show you murder! Hey, Tommy Stem Cell, come over here!
What's up, Sammy? Hey, what was it? Was that a knife?
Eat steel, you greasy zygote! Look, Reverend, I'm killing the cure for cancer!
Stop it! Stop, I say, you horrible little thing! You're horrific!
You're welcome, ass much! You better hightail it out of here unless you want a piece of what Tommy got! Now I'm gonna eat him!
On second thoughts, listen to what Sammy says when he says, humans, f*** humans. Humans suck.
Yeah!
Hi, this is Charles Barkley, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Anything less would be uncivilized. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Our state variation. Call American Life, 1-866-492-2500. That's 1-866-492-2500.
folks. It's Mark Maron. I'm here with Mark Reilly.
Good morning.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. In a few minutes, we're going to talk to Eli Wallach. But right now, we're going to discuss something quite different than that. In his new book, The Genius Factory, The Curious History of the Nobel Prize Sperm Bank, the author exposes one of the most radical experiments in human breeding. He's here to talk about it now. Please welcome author David Plotz. Good morning, David.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
You're also the editor, the deputy editor of Slate Magazine Online, eh?
That's right, yeah.
So let's talk about this book. What was the, first of all, the Nobel Prize Sperm Bank's not open anymore.
It is not open. It was a real sperm bank in Southern California, of course.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Where else would it have?
Where else would it be? Yeah. That was that operated from 1980 to 1999. It was run by an extremely eccentric, wealthy, conservative inventor who decided...
A conservative inventor.
Mm-hmm. His name was Robert Graham. Mm-hmm. He decided that America was going to hell, basically, because too many dumb people were having too many children, and helped by welfare programs and other government support that encouraged the retrograde humans, was what he called them, to breed.
So this is a real eugenics program.
It was a eugenics project to breed a few more kind of leaders and scientists and politicians to take over the country and prevent these morons from...
That's before they knew they could just do it with propaganda, I guess.
Yeah, right. Now, when he said too many dumb people, was he implying black people?
He probably was. It wasn't a big thing for him. There were lots of people associated with him who were extremely racist, and the major figure associated with the sperm bank was a guy named William Shockley.
Extremely racist.
Who was a Nobel Prize winning physicist and businessman who, in the last half of his life, became this kind of racist
monster. You can say it, monster.
And Shockley had gone around the country lecturing about the low intelligence of blacks and he was the only public donor to the Nobel Prize Sperm Bank. Graham himself, the bank's founder himself.
Public donor, you mean sperm donor?
The only sperm donor who ever admitted donating sperm to the sperm bank was William Shockley. But Graham himself he was racist, but it wasn't a big thing for him. He was much more concerned about all dumb people, and he thought dumb people could be white or black or Asian. Any
dumbness crossed racial lines.
Yes, he believed that,
and he didn't let racism define him. He thought he was doing everyone a big favor with the sperm bank. So who were the who were these donors?
Well, at the beginning there were Nobel Prize winners.
Like
I can't say because it's confidential. I know the identity. There were three Nobel Prize winners. One was William Shockley. I know the identity of another one, and then the other one I don't know who it is.
But you can't say that at all.
And I can't say the other one.
Okay.
And then after, there was a lot of bad publicity because Shockley was involved in it, and Shockley was such a controversial figure. And so all the Nobel Prize winners quit, and so he had to get new sperm donors. So he recruited an Olympic gold medalist. He recruited some younger scientists who were... who weren't Nobelists yet, and he hoped they would be.
So he's lowering the standards of his eugenics experiment.
Yeah, he lowered it, and it sort of kept sinking and sinking and sinking through the 90s. But by the end, it was guys, like us, probably.
Popular racist entertainers at the time.
There was one guy who was a donor who was a political activist who I knew of, and his views were, when I discovered who it was, his views are so incredibly dismal. It really depressed me about the nature of the project.
And he might have a kid out there.
Well, I think he actually was turned down as a donor.
Oh.
He said he was turned down for health reasons as a donor, not for ideological reasons.
Now, were there restrictions on who could receive this? Because dawns that, you know, just because you have genius sperm, suppose it's a stupid egg.
That was a big issue.
Look at me. Mom. Go ahead.
At the beginning, Graham only let women who belonged to Mensa, the high IQ society, take his sperm. But he quickly got rid of that, and then it was any woman who wanted it.
So let's fast forward. How many people were actually fathered through this sperm bank?
Well, in the 20 years it was open, about 215 kids. And for the Genius Factory, I tracked down about 35 of them. And
was there any effort, like in Boys of Brazil, to sort of manage the way these kids were brought up?
There wasn't. Originally, the founder, Robert Graham, wanted to study them and to run experiments on them and show that they were, in fact, smarter than your average kid. But the parents didn't want any part of it. So once they were born, they kind of went out in the world and just lived their lives.
David Plotz, this sperm bank was closed, but will the idea of making better people ever really die?
It has totally not died at all. In fact, the reason the sperm bank closed basically was that they didn't need it anymore, because all sperm banks these days have the same eugenic goal. Now, it's not as Graham had this kind of political ideology and this slightly racist kind of overtone to what he was doing that these sperm banks, current sperm banks, don't. But all sperm banks, if you go to them, the guys are all really tall.
Perfection, right?
Yeah, they're tall. They're well educated. They're really healthy, and they're talented in all sorts of different ways. That's because the women who are going to sperm banks to shop insist on it. They demand that.
The Scandinavian goo is very popular.
Danish. There's a Danish sperm bank called Cryos where they. It's the big thing in the sperm bank world. Everyone wants those Danish genes.
Right. So whether they say it's intelligence or racial superiority, the idea is that you're going to get something better than you would. You're going to get some sort of perfection. You're going to get some control over or perhaps maximize your ability to have a perfect child. But obviously that's always a goal. That's a good point. There's no bargain sperm banks. I mean, there's no sort of like, we're the grab bag.
The Joe's Discount Sperm Warehouse.
Yeah. Oh my God. So where are these kids, though? Did you talk to any of them?
I talked to about 35 of them.
Okay, and are they geniuses? Are they doing well in
the
world?
They are above average as a group. So
really?
They're definitely above average. I mean, there are a few who are completely brilliant, some who are wonderful, athletic and artistic talents out there. There are some who are below average, but I don't attribute it at all to the Nobel sperm or the genius sperm they got. You ask yourself, what kind of woman goes to a sperm bank called the Nobel Prize Sperm Bank? A woman who is intent on raising children who are going to be accomplished. And so I see it as more a triumph of nurture over nature. These are mothers who were really hyper-involved in their kids' lives and pushed their kids a lot.
Was there any commonality? Did these people know about each other? Did they stay in contact with each other?
No, they knew nothing about each other. They have nothing in common with each other. The only thing they had in common is they all applied to the sperm bank. And so, that was the great difficulty of the project, is you can't find, the kids are anonymous. How do you find them? Because they're spread all over the country from parents of all kinds of different backgrounds. And so they have nothing in common, and they don't have reunions or anything.
We're talking to David Plotz. The book is The Genius Factory, The Curious History of the Nobel Sperm Bank. Now, did any of these kids find out about what they came from, try to find their fathers?
That's the great story of the book.
Mm. Oh, good. Well, I'm glad I've touched upon it.
Is I take a couple of the kids, in one case a 12-year-old girl named Joy, who lives in Pennsylvania, who was looking for her father, donor white. All the donors had code color names. Mm-hmm. And then a 15-year-old boy in Kansas City who was looking for his father, who's donor coral. And so the book is about their search for themselves and their search for what their identity is. Are they geniuses? Does it matter? What is family? How do I find my father?
Wow, that sounds exciting, and it sounds like the perfect place to close the interview, because that'll make people go, what happened?
Exactly. They can read The Genius Factory and find out.
Great. Thanks so much for talking to us, David Plotz. Again, the book, The Genius Factory, The Curious History of the Nobel Prize Sperm Bank. It was great talking to you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys.
Stay tuned. We've got Eli Wallach coming up. It is 27 past the hour here on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is former Labor Secretary Robert Reich. Remember me? I helped preside over the greatest economic expansion in our nation's history, creating over 20 million new jobs during Clinton years. I'm sorry to hear that the Bush administration has either outsourced or eliminated your job entirely. But while you're waiting for things to turn around, stay tuned to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Give me back my job again.
Show how righteous we are. We have to show those liberal hippies.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Welcome back, people. 34 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron with Mark Riley. This is Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio. And the man accompanying that familiar music is, at 89 years old, the senior most guest ever to appear on Morning Sedition. That's quite an achievement by itself, but he's also a legendary actor of the stage and screen, and now he's written a memoir called The Good, The Bad, and Me. Eli Wallach is here. Mr. Wallach,
Let me ask you, right off the bat, how many films have you been in?
If I call you Mark, will you call me Eli?
Of course I will. Okay. Eli, you got a deal.
All right. How many movies have I made?
Yeah.
Counting TV movies?
Sure. No, why not?
Maybe about 80.
80? And when did you start your acting career? Where was it? Here in New York?
Yes. Well, I started as a little boy in Red Hook, Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
Then I went to the University of Texas.
Really?
That's where I learned to ride horses.
Yeah?
And I wound up playing spaghetti westerns and all kind of westerns. The horse would always turn around and look at me and say, "Oh, God, a guy from New York." But I did them.
So did you, when you were in Texas, what drove you to the University of Texas, out of all places?
$30 a year tuition.
Oh, that's a good deal. And the opportunity to ride horses.
Yeah.
When you finished at the University of Texas, you came back to New York, you started doing theater at that point?
No. Everyone in my family were teachers. And it was decided by a family vote that I was to be a teacher. And I thought, every doctor, lawyer, accountant I know all wanted to be actors.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be an actor all my life. So my brother said, "You got to take the teacher's exam, you be a teacher. You got a pension, you get all of that." So I took the teacher's exam and fortunately failed it.
Good for you.
And I got a scholarship to an acting school. In the class with me was Gregory Peck, Ephraim Zimbalist, Tony Randall, all these people were together.
Which class was this? What's
the Neighborhood Playhouse School of the Theater. And I'm on the board of that school.
Now. Wow.
Now. But then I didn't make my first movie. When I graduated from that school, I kept saying, "Broadway, here I come."
Yeah.
And Uncle Sam said, Wait a second. So in 1940, the end of the year, I got the lowest number in the draft. And I was drafted.
Mm-hmm.
After 5 years of that, I kept saying, "Broadway, I'm coming.
I just took a little side journey.
Yeah. But I didn't do any movies from 1945 till 1955.
Now at the Neighborhood Playhouse, when you're with Gregory Peck, you're with Tony Randall, like, what were those guys like then? And was Tony Randall annoying? Was he, in your recollection of these people?
I think they were gifted, talented young men.
Oh, you're not going to give us any dirt from the Neighborhood Playhouse?
Why do you want dirt? I made a movie with Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
See, everybody bristles and brightens up and says, "Oh, tell us about that."
Well, were there any in there that didn't make it as big that maybe we
me,
would know?
Me, for the first time.
You're right.
You did all right.
Yeah.
No,
80
no.
films, I figured you're okay.
Yeah, but I didn't do my first movie for 10 years after I got out of the Army. My first movie was shot, now Mark, in Mississippi.
Uh-oh.
In 1955 or 56.
Mm-hmm.
And it was written by Tennessee Williams. And it was called Baby Doll with Carl Malden, Carol Baker, and me.
That was a controversial movie.
It was condemned by the Catholic Church. And I thought, I don't understand why. What did we do wrong?
Mm-hmm.
You know. But Time magazine said this is probably the most pornographic movie ever made.
Really?
It's so dirty it would make Boccaccio blush.
Why?
It's filled with Priapian details. And I didn't know what Priapian was, so I ran to the dictionary. And it means if you got a constant erection.
Yeah.
And I thought, I didn't realize that was happening while I'm making it. Anyway, that's in my book.
Now, the book is called The Good, the Bad, and Me.
It's in my anecdotage. I put that in. And I also put in The Good, the Bad, and Me. And it's about my experiences in movies, theater, television, that.
Now, you were in 80 films. Was there ever a role that you turned down and then later regretted when you saw the finished product?
I turned down one role, but I didn't regret it. I was supposed to do, after I did The Rose Tattoo by Tennessee Williams for a year and a half. The next play he had, I was to do, called Camino Real, to be directed by Kazan. And I thought, oh, God, this is my great opportunity because it's a great, great play. They couldn't raise the money because it was a fantasy and nobody wanted to go see that kind of thing. So I went and did a screen test and I passed the screen test. They said to me, one picture, 7-year contract. I said, no, I'll do this one picture. If you like it, fine, then I'll do another one, but I won't do 7 years any. Then the money came through for the play. Now I had to choose.
Mm-hmm.
I got the role in the movie. Do I play the movie or do I do the play? And I chose the play because I felt that was a great experience. The play, the movie was called From Here to Eternity.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank Sinatra played Maggio.
Mm-hmm.
Every time he'd see me after that, he'd say, "Hello, you crazy actor."
That was the part you were up for?
That's the part.
Did you stay, did you remain friends with Elia Kazan?
It was a difficult relationship.
Because I know a lot of people had a falling out with him after
the
committee.
30 years later, he's going to California to get an honorary award.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, "What am I going to do?" He felt they would attack him. I said, "You go out there, and you go out on the stage, and you say, I've flown 3,000 miles to say thank you and walk off."
Mm.
He didn't do that. He brought De Niro out with him. But no, I was born in Red Hook, Little Italy, Brooklyn, in the middle of an Italian neighborhood with a mafia. And I was the only Jew in a sea of Italians, but I love Italy. But as a kid, I learned you never squealed, you never snitched. And he knew my feelings about that.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a great opportunity for me as an actor to work with a genius, a great director.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did.
We've talked about film. We've talked about theater. We haven't talked much about your work in television. Was there something that you felt was just like your best work on TV?
Well, I've done a lot of television. For Whom the Bell Tolls. The most mail I get for anything I've ever done, stage, movies, anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Was one episode of Batman.
Really?
Yeah.
The TV series, Batman.
The TV series. I played Mr. Freeze with a German accent. I'm going to freeze the whole world.
Yeah.
I got $350 for one episode, a half-hour episode. 2 years ago, Arnold Schwarzenegger played Mr. Freeze in the Batman movie.
Right.
He got $20 million. So I said, I can't believe it. I'll never see $20 million my whole life. I don't understand this. Anyway, I'm getting more and more frustrated. And my wife said, "Lift weights." Lift weights. Now, less than a month ago, we're being honored in Washington for something.
You don't know what it was?
Yeah, I knew what it was.
Okay.
But the lady who arranged it
called
up Schwarzenegger and told him this story.
Yeah.
And when a day later, she said, "There's a present for you in the hotel." I go to the hotel, and there's a box. I open the box. It's from the governor of California. And in it are two weights that are half a pound each.
I thought you were going to say, and $20 million.
Oh, yes. Good luck.
Yeah, right?
He's having trouble balancing the
budget out here. Right?
So a couple of quick questions before we go.
Where are you going?
I'm not going anywhere. We can stay here all day.
Right. Yeah, we can
do
that.
To order food in? Who was your favorite director to work with?
I have three children.
Yes.
If you said to me, "Which one is your favorite?"
You'd have an answer.
I'd say, no, I wouldn't. I wouldn't.
Okay.
That's cheating. You don't do that. I worked, the first director was Kazan.
Sure.
The second director was a man named Don Siegel, who was a...
Dirty Harry. Didn't he direct Dirty Harry?
Yeah. And a favorite of Clint Eastwood.
Which film did you do with Don Siegel?
It was called The Lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "I read the script. I killed four people. I'm going to kill the fifth. I don't want to." He says, "Listen, Eli, it's a movie. It's in San Francisco. You'll do very well." I said, "All right." And as a joke, I said, "All right. I want $10,000 to kill him." He said, "All right, you got it." Now I'm stuck. My wife sees the movie. We're at the world premiere. And the last scene is a mother and her daughter in a... where the fish are. What do you call it?
Aquarium.
Aquarium.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm there, and I say to this little girl who has a doll, she's carrying drugs, and I said, "Give me the doll." And every time I was going to shoot somebody, I'd open an attaché case like this.
Yeah.
And I take out the gun and put the silencer in, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So my wife and I are watching the movie in California. Our eyes are still smarting from all the pictures they took of us out there.
Yeah.
And I'm in, the shot comes where I say to the kid, give me the doll, Riley. And I go, and I open the suitcase. And my wife says, if you shoot that mother and child, I'll never speak to you again. So, there you have it.
And did you?
Did I? No. I think I died, I made the first five movies, I died in three. I got shot by Yul Brynner in The Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
My son was beside himself. He's 6 years old. He says, gee, Dad, couldn't you outdraw Yul Brynner? I said, Peter, it's in the script. If I get shot, I get shot. And anyway, that's all in my book.
Well, I tell you, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Has it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Really, now, come on.
Why would I say that? Well, of course it has.
I'll tell you something.
What?
This has been one of the most pleasant interviews I've had.
Have you had some bad ones?
Well, it's relaxed, and you haven't read the book.
I have the book.
But you haven't read it.
Well, why would I ruin it? Because then I'd be finishing the stories for you. I wouldn't be able to let
you
tell the story.
See, you hit the key right on the head.
Yeah, there I mean, you don't want to hear you tell the stories. But
you want me to give you one last joke?
Sure.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Sure.
This old man is 94 years old. I tell jokes a lot.
Okay.
He's 94 years old. It's his birthday. Mm. And his two sons decide to give him a present. And they go out and they hire a hooker. And she goes to the apartment, and she knocks on the door. And the old man comes in and says, yes, what? She says, I'm your birthday present, and I'm here to give you super sex. Yeah. There's a long pause. He says, all right, I'll take the soup.
Eli Wallach, thank you. Great.
Thank you, Eli Wallach.
The book is The Good, The Bad, and Me in My Anecdotage. We're going to wrap things up in just a minute. This is Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Steal right now for a free quote. 800-708-3095. 800-708-3095.
We're back. Let's land this thing. It's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hiya.
You're listening to Air America Radio.
Hey, Mark.
Yeah?
Yeah, there's actually a call on the line here. It's Future Mark.
Oh, I love Future Mark. Put him through.
Hey, buddy. What's up?
Hey, buddy. What's up? So, Future Mark, what's going on in the year 2050?
Well, I've been time traveling again, and...
Okay. Oh, you're using the trip harness. You don't sound too happy, man. What's the matter?
Yeah, well, don't be pissed at me, okay?
I can't promise you that until you tell me what's going on. What did we do?
Well, I used my trip harness to go into the past to kind of, you know, try to fix some stuff.
Fix some stuff?
Yeah, you know, fix some stuff.
Uh-huh.
You're not really supposed to go back, okay? But I did.
Oh, man, that doesn't sound like a great idea. Doesn't that screw up the time-space continuum and all that?
Yeah, it does. Oh. But that's not all. There's a glitch in the software, so every time I go back, I leave one of us there.
Oh, no.
In our past, and I've been back a lot.
Dude, our past isn't a good place to be, buddy. I mean, how many times have you gone back?
I don't even know, man. The temptation to change the past is so strong. I mean, all right, so far I've found like 40 of us.
40? Oh, dude, you got addicted to it, man, didn't you? Oh, no. Were they doing what I'm thinking they were doing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time. They were drinking.
Oh, Jesus. 40 of us drinking. Where are they now?
Well, some of them are in L.A. One's in Berkeley. There are 12 in New York, and there are a whole bunch of us hiding in some lodge in Idaho.
Oh.
Apparently, one of us opened a bar near Coeur d'Alene. Worst case scenario.
12 in New York? Wait. I saw a guy standing on 6th Street staring at me last week. He had a beard and he was filthy, but I knew it was me. Damn it.
Yeah, actually, you know, dude, I've been trying to round them all up and send them back to the future. So, you know, don't freak out. Okay, man, this can be done. It'll be fine.
Oh, man.
And by the way, I have filthy bearded Mark right here. He's going back today.
Put him on the phone.
Hey, buddy, what's up?
Don't hey buddy me. When did you come back?
I think it was like 1989.
Oh, jeez, and you've been hiding and drinking this whole time? You came back from the future with the knowledge that we got sober and you blew it?
No. Yeah.
Hey,
give me the phone, man. Give me... Hey, buddy, what's up? dude. Hey, I need a favor.
Yeah.
I met these two girls, and I need, like, $500 right now. Can you do it?
Oh, no, you're another Mark, and you're all coked up right now, aren't you?
Yeah. But listen, they're really hot, man. Come on, just don't be an a-hole. Give me the money, man, please. Can you give me the money? Give me that. Get out. God, I'm like children. Sorry, man.
Well, how come you aren't messed up, Future Mark? Did you, use?
No, man. All right, I took some ecstasy, but that was it.
Oh,
look,
dude,
I should have all the marks rounded up in a week or so, and we'll all go to rehab in the future.
All right. Dude, make sure you get all of them, okay?
I'll get them all. Oh, yeah, it reminds me. You know how I always give you some advice?
Yes, please. Give me some advice, Captain Glowstick. What?
Okay, well, there's this one mark out there who is, let's put it this way.
Yeah.
If you get a call from Finland, just hang up, all right? Let Interpol handle it.
Oh.
Remember, okay, buddy, in the future, you can always sex change back.
All right, look, I'm hanging up now. I'm very disappointed in all of us.
God, he got us in trouble. We're all in trouble. I can't believe that guy.
Hey, Mark, you're not going to believe this either. There's a guy here. He says he's you, and he's about 2 inches tall.
What?
Hey, buddy, what's up?
Oh, no, not you too, future Mark.
Dude, let's party, man. I got an 8-ball.
Oh, go hide in my desk. I'm going to deal with you later. You're going to a meeting.
Loser.
Wow. I wonder, you know what? We should have him on the show more. I like the little teeny weeny version of me. All right, folks, I'll be performing at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey this Saturday. So go to bananascomedyclub.com for ticket info. Riley and I will be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn this Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. There's going to be a bunch of giveaways.
Yeah.
We got DMC from Run DMC is going to be down there. You can go to morningsedition.com for details on that. Also, before we go, I want to say we're raising money to send inner city kids to summer camp. You can change the life of a kid in the South Bronx if you go to morningsedition.com and click on the Camp Air America link for details. Riley, tomorrow we got Daniel Gross, who's this kid who's going to try to start a union at Starbucks.
Yeah, I'm big pro union.
Yeah, so actually there's a Starbucks right here in this building, so maybe we can go get him. Maybe we can do some union organizing downstairs. Maybe we can stage a walkout.
That'll be
fun. Maybe it just stop mid steam. Everyone out. Yep. Hold the steamer. Plus we'll talk to Lawton Small. It's 57 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Edition. Have a great day.
I got an inconsistent mental disposition.
The Cheers theme.
Now how's that gonna look in the deposition?
Uh-huh.
I got all messed up by a crooked family physician. Now to clear my name, I'm on a mission. So please cut me some slack. This is a little Manchurian blowback. Don't think that I'm insane. It's just creepy weirdos messing with my brain.
Wow.
Hey, what happened to that Fast? You remember the Fast song you played about Al Franken?
It was going to end up like this. Al Franken, nothing to lose. Makes you laugh at the troubling news. Sometimes I wonder if he's hitting the booze. Al Franken,
King of the Jews.
Thank you, Brian. You've made our morning. We'll talk to you soon.